Today's episode of the Axon Creative Podcast is brought to you by FreshBooks. To see how FreshBooks can save you time and boost your creativity, go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Hey everyone, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast. My name is Todd Henry. I am your host. A word that has become used very often in the marketplace over the last couple of years is resilience. We talk a lot about the importance of being resilient in the face of resistance, resilient when our work doesn't quite measure up to what we wish it measured up to, you know, when we're not quite performing at the level we want to. It's important that we exhibit the ability to persist in the face of uncertainty. But how do we do that? What does that look like on a practical level? You know, it's easy to talk about big concepts like resilience, but how do you, on a tactical level, exhibit resilience in your work as a creative professional every day? Well, on today's show, Neil Pasricha is going to help us do just that. Neil is the New York Times bestselling author of 5 books. His new book is called You Are Awesome: How to Navigate Change, Wrestle with Failure, and Live an Intentional Life. He also hosts the award-winning podcast 3 Books, where he's on a 15-year-long quest to uncover the 1,000 most formative books in the world. We're going to talk about resilience. We're going to talk about what it takes to bring your best every single day, even in the face of failure, and why that failure may even be the best thing that ever happened to you sometimes. I know it sounds strange, but totally true. Before we jump in, I want to let you know today's episode is brought to you by FreshBooks. So as a creative pro, you're in the business of turning clever ideas into customer value. It's what you do. But the thing is, great ideas and great creative work take time to cultivate. And let's face it, running a business doesn't always provide enough time to do great creative work, especially when your mind is occupied with the administrative stuff, right? Well, that's where our sponsor, FreshBooks, can help. FreshBooks is accounting software that's designed specifically for creative professionals like you and like me. It's so easy to use that you're going to save up to 16 hours a month on time-consuming admin and paperwork, which means more time to let your creativity flourish. FreshBooks is packed with time-saving features, like you can create and send branded invoices in about 30 seconds. It's so easy, so simple, so intuitive. You can set up ACH and credit card payments right on your invoices and get paid up to 2 times faster. You can snap photos of your receipts from your phone and make managing expenses 1,000,000 times faster. So when tax time rolls around, you can export tidy reports for expenses, invoice details, and sales tax to make working with your accountant a breeze. So allocate more time to creating and let FreshBooks do all of the boring and accounting and bookkeeping. That's not what you want to be spending your time doing. Right now, we're offering our listeners a free 30-day trial of FreshBooks. No credit card required. That's incredibly rare, by the way. So just go to freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section to get started. That's freshbooks.com/accidental and enter accidental creative in the How Did You Hear About Us section. We thank FreshBooks for sponsoring this episode of the Accidental Creative Podcast. Well, it's so great to have on the show today Neil Pasricha. Neil is the author of several books, and he's doing a lot of stuff. And his new book's called You Are Awesome: How to Navigate Change, Wrestle with Failure, and Live an Intentional Life. Neil, welcome to the Axon Creative Podcast.
Todd, thank you so much for having me here.
So I'm thrilled about this book. First of all, just hit number one. Congratulations. That's people don't understand how like impossible that is, right? To do that. So congratulations. That's a fantastic accomplishment.
Thank you so much. And the other funny thing is, you know, as an author, you cling to whatever number one you grab. As you and I both know, there's a ton of different bestseller lists. That's all have right. Different levels of prestige and importance. So we hit number one on 3 lists, and we did not, I want to just caveat it, we did not hit number one on the New York Times bestseller list, which of course is, for everybody in the industry, kind of like the big one. So,
it's also a heavily curated list. And I think people don't realize that. Like the New York Times list is not the list of the list of the best-selling books, right?
It's actually, so funny you say that, because my literary agent emailed me after, and he was like, hey, the good news is you outsold 7 of the 10 books on the New York Times bestseller list under the category you're in, self-help miscellaneous advice. The bad news is they did not put you on the list.
Right.
Like, well, how do I control that? He's like, you can't. Maybe they didn't like the title. Maybe this week they wanted to like really focus on cookbooks. You don't really know. Yeah. So what I've decided to do in my life, Todd, as best I can, is I got to focus on intrinsic motivators. I just have to. Because if I let extrinsic motivators affect me too much, then I will constantly be, you know, hustling for the next follower or friend or like, and I will just be devolving into a world of serving an algorithm that is controlling my brain. And you and I both know the research backs this up too. You follow extrinsic motivators, you're done. You can't ever get out of that trap.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And I always liken it to, it's like somebody's dangling a carrot in front of you. You're running on a treadmill, and every so often somebody picks up the treadmill and moves it, but the carrot's still out there, you know, in front of you. And that's kind of what chasing those arbitrary goals like lists and things like that, that's what it does, right?
Especially profound. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
I was going to say, it could be, you know, the next big client, the big project. It could be like any of those things. If that's what's driving you is getting that thing, when you get there, so often you look and you realize like, this is not nearly as gratifying as I thought it would be.
And the dangling the carrot metaphor that you just used is actually so apropos, to use a word I never use, because Teresa Amabile at Brandeis University did this incredible study where they asked a group of girls, I want to say they're 12 years old, to teach piano for half an hour to a group of like 9-year-old girls. One group was given the carrot, a ticket to the movies after the half an hour training session was complete. The other group was given no carrot, just a genuine thank you from somebody saying, I really appreciate you helping me. Mm-hmm. Well, guess what? According to the study, this is, by the way, a study I mentioned in my last book, The Happiness Equation. According to the study, the girls who were paid for it had the carrot. They got frustrated more easily. They quit right at the half an hour, and the training was not nearly as rich.
Yeah.
The ones who were given nothing except intrinsic motivators, like an actual deep thank you, stayed a little bit longer, were more patient, and the girls who they were teaching learned more piano. So it's like, we gotta always, in this creative world that we both play in, we have to always eschew, to use another word that I don't use, and I think I probably mispronounced, we have to like get rid of all those things that are just constantly flung in our faces. I hate the number system that my cell phone tries to feed me every day.
Yeah, absolutely. No question. Okay, so along those lines, this book called You're Awesome, it's your new book, it's about resilience, really at the heart of it. That's kind of the core topic. Why did you choose resilience as your next topic?
Because it's kind of related to what we're just talking about, because I'm not resilient, you know, like, and oftentimes what we're writing for, of course, is for ourselves. I find like, you know, somebody doesn't email me back, I'm like, they hate me. I'm never going to hear from them again. I get 2 likes on a photo, I'm like, I got no friend. Like, I'm super thin skinned. And it's really weird because at this stage of my career, you mentioned in the intro, I'm like, I've had some success. Like, I sold 1 million books. I've kind of hit the things I wanted to hit. So why am I so thin-skinned? And I look into the research. Turns out everyone's feeling this way. Anxiety is spiking. Loneliness is spiking. Depression is spiking. And I'm starting to see it in my children, which scares me because they're so young. Yeah. And as I walk around, I'm like, I actually am starting to think that this muscle of resilience is something all of us have slightly atrophied, partially because of cell phones and partially because life is pretty good. Like, not many of my friends are getting shipped off to war against their will right now, like happened a generation ago, right, or suffering through a major famine or a deep plague or anything. So as a result of the gold star and participation ribbon culture that most of us have grown up in, myself included, we have not developed the mental skill set to handle failure or even perceived failure, which means the inevitable flops you hit in your life, whether that's a divorce, loss of a friend, the loss of a job, whatever, we don't have the equipment internally now to handle them. So I wrote You Are Awesome to provide myself with that equipment, that musculature, and hopeful that it reaches other people who are suffering like me from a bit of anxiety or a bit of stress or just feeling a little bit burnt out in the world today.
You know, it's interesting the way you describe that as, you know, we're not being shipped off to war. Generally speaking, again, people, we're talking about, you know, Western culture. We're talking about people who would have the means to be able to buy a book like this and read it or listen to this podcast, right? Like, generally speaking.
Yeah, huge caveat that I'm deeply privileged. You know, I kind of have to say that all the time, but that's just my own experience. But having said that, my parents are immigrants and, you know, I grew up with, you know, very, very kind of middle of middle class.
Sure.
But yeah, I'm referring to the Western world.
Yeah. And so, you know, generally speaking, up until maybe a couple of generations ago, I think largely the worldview was the world is chaotic. There are all kinds of forces beyond your control. And so just be happy for what you have and just recognize anything could change at any moment and your world could be thrown into chaos, right? You know, a depression, World War I, World War II, you know, any number of things could happen that will just throw your world into chaos. And so you just have to recognize it. I think there's a very different narrative today that exists. I think it's Listen, you're largely in control of your fate. You are largely able to shape what happens. And that layers an additional kind of pressure on especially talented, capable people, right? This idea that if I fail, well, or failure is not an option, right? Or if I fail, it means there's something fundamentally wrong with me because there's all this opportunity out there.
Yes, that's so true. I mentioned it before we started recording. I just like literally came from like a Costco book signing. You know, you made it when you're signing books in Costco, right? So I'm in the Costco and almost every book I signed was for somebody saying, this is for my son in college who's really stressed. This is for my daughter in high school. Yeah. And I said, why are they so stressed? And the parents kept saying, they worry that if they don't, you know, if they don't stay in on a Friday night studying biology, well, everyone else is, and the world's gotten so ratcheted high, like the expectations are so high that there's no time to party anymore. There's no time to let loose. There's no time to like, you know, and Instagram's constantly feeding us a story of how you're never good enough. And that's for all of us. So our kids are deeply, deeply stressed. And I mean, we're looking at the same stuff ourselves. I always say cell phones have three problems. Number one is the psychological one I just mentioned. Everyone's greatest hits are on display compared to your director's cut. No matter how good the lunch you ate is, somebody's at a lobster buffet in the Maldives, you know? Right. Then there's a physical problem, which is that when you look at a bright screen within an hour of bedtime, your brain doesn't produce as much melatonin, so you don't have as deep a sleep, so you're less resilient in the morning, so you instinctively turn to your cell phone again. Mm. That's huge. By the way, Todd, I always say, if you slept with a bottle of wine in your bed and drank a bottle of wine before bed and drank a bottle of wine when you got up, we'd all call you an alcoholic. We're all phoneaholics these days and we don't even notice it. Right. 99% of people sleep within 10 feet of their phone.
Yeah.
I made up that stat, but it's based on when I stand up in front of an audience asking, and it's like every hand pretty much goes up. And the third problem is productivity. There's a study that says that we now spend 31% of our days bookmarking, prioritizing, and switching between tasks. We're not actually doing anything. We're just deciding what to do. And if you've ever stared at a Netflix screen trying to decide what movie to watch for half an hour, but you don't actually pick one, then you know what this feels like. So the right. Three P's of cell phone problems are all, you know, psychological, physical, and productive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So, you know, I think there's this, and you call this out in the book, there's this sort of lie that I believe we believe, and it is a lie, I think. Oh, you know, it's easy for Neil, right? It's easy for Neil to take risks. He sold 1 million books, right? And he's very successful and everybody's asking his opinion. He's doing books. Like, it's easy for Neil. But in the book, you point out that high achievers fail harder than low achievers often.
Yes.
Why is that the case?
Yeah, it's amazing. I don't know if you're familiar with this idea of maximizer versus satisficer. It's an old famous index. So a maximizer is the one that's like trying to decide for half an hour what to order for lunch and really wants the perfect meal and wants to split half of this meal and half of that meal. And you know, these are some of the questions the index asks. A satisficer is like, well, whatever I get, I'm fine with, you know. Maximizers are people that are, as you said, you know, the sort of people that have high expectations on themselves. They fail harder because they think, to answer your question, Todd, this is on me. It's my fault. I didn't work hard enough. I didn't study hard enough. I wasn't prepared. Whereas a satisficer or someone with lower expectations is like more likely to more accurately think, maybe I wasn't set up for success. Maybe the system didn't allow for me to be successful. Maybe there's random luck or chance involved here.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I was great on the bell curve. So I did great and I did better than I thought, but you know, a few people did better. So I got a B instead of an A. This is a problem. Because most people listening to this podcast, Todd, and I'm guessing me and you too, are of the former camp. So when we don't have a book hit the New York Times bestseller list, or when we don't have a project that like gets a stunning, you know, thumbs up from the boss, or when we don't, you know, get the gig that we're going for, say we're pitching like a freelance portfolio or something, we don't get it. You know what we think? It's on me. But right. Part of that is just a story we're telling ourselves. We have to zoom out and see the bigger picture, see the system. And see the fact that it's not necessarily your fault. We're too hard on ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I there's one thing I try to teach my kids because it's so amazing to me how many stories I believe from my childhood that are still playing out today as an adult. You know, about who I am in the world, about what I'm capable of, what I'm not capable of. About, you know, I call these ghost rules, these invisible narratives. I mean, I find these in organizations all the time.
Great phrase.
Yeah, but you know, it's so often the case that the story that I'm telling myself is, well, that's not you know, that's not possible for you. Like, you can't do that, or that's not something that you're able to do. And so I try to tell our kids, listen, your job is to work as hard as you can to set yourself up for success. And success may or may not happen. And you can't control that, right? All you can control is how you prepare yourself for that, for success to happen. If you put yourself in enough positions where you're likely to succeed, eventually you are going to succeed. But I think so many people think it's like all or nothing. It's this one thing. I mean, they think that, you know, a successful entrepreneur is somebody who made one huge bet in their life and it paid off. Mm-hmm. And you and I both know that most really successful entrepreneurs are typically in their late 30s, they've tried two or three businesses mm-hmm. that have failed. Or what's that?
Or 12.
Or 12 or 15, mm-hmm. exactly. And, you know, but that's the profile of the average successful entrepreneur, is somebody who's had a track record. Now, we hear about the Mark Zuckerbergs, and we hear about the, you know, all of these people who maybe on their first go, like, got it right. But that's not the norm. The norm is it takes years or decades often to get to a position where you have the wisdom, the experience to be able to bring something into the world.
Absolutely. I agree with your point. And let me sprinkle a little bit of salt on it, because chapter 5 of You Are Awesome is, of course, called Lose More to Win More. Mm-hmm. And this was just, you know, part of the secret to resilience is the fact that you have to take more shots. It's the old, you know, Wayne Gretzky or Michael Jordan, whoever said it, quote, but, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. Yeah. I was reminded of this point, Todd, when I flipped through an old baseball statistics book that my dad bought for me when I was a kid. And remember, this is pre-internet, pre-like Wikipedia and stuff. And I remember stumbling upon the fact that this guy named Cy Young was the number one pitcher in baseball when it came to number of wins. He has like over 500 wins. Nobody's ever got more wins than Cy Young. Then I look at the number of losses, okay? Guess who has the most losses? Cy Young. He has 316 losses. Nobody's ever lost more games than him. So I look over to strikeouts. It's the best thing you can do as a pitcher, strike somebody up. Number one is Nolan Ryan. He has 5,714 strikeouts. Who has the most walks? Kind of like the worst thing you can do, you know, miss the strike zone four times in a row. Nolan Ryan, he has 2,795 walks. He's the most walks. And then I stumbled upon this quote from Todd Hansen, who is the head writer for The Onion for a long time. And he said he was always asked this question of like, how do I get paid to write jokes like you, funny man? I make everyone in my frat house laugh like crazy on the couch, so I want to get paid. And he always answers with a great quote, which is, do it for free for 10 years. Yes. That is ultimately the secret. My little cousin's like, Neil, how do I get my YouTube channel to take off? I'm like, oh, it's really easy. Make 100 videos.
Yeah.
Make 100 videos. I guarantee by the time you hit the number 100, you compare it to your first, your quality will have dramatically spiked. You'll be getting more views. You'll understand how the algorithm works. You will be playing the game better.
Yeah.
So it's not how many. It's the same thing with a wedding photographer. How'd you get 50 good pictures of the wedding and everybody else was there? They didn't get such good pictures. And they always say, oh, I took 1,000 photos.
Yes.
Like I threw away 95% of them.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Some of those early, I'm sure your early blog posts, and certainly when I started podcasting in 2005, some of those early podcast episodes were terrible, right? But you do it and you do it and you do it when nobody's listening. And so by the time somebody is listening, you're good. You're ready to go, right? You're ready for listeners.
Exactly. And so it's the challenging part there, of course, is how do you know if you're on the right path? Like if you're having flop after flop after flop, say you're like in the 10 years of writing comedy for no money.
Right.
How do you know you're eventually going to be the editor of The Onion? You know, arguably the funniest, you know, comedy paper in the world for a period of time.
Right.
You don't. So then I say in the book, the commencement speech question of like, follow your heart, do what you love. That's actually an error. And in order to build resilience, we need to ask ourselves a different question, which is, do you love it so much you can take the pain and the punishment too,
mm-hmm.
right? So if you are loving the process of writing, great. Mark Manson, author of The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F, is very famous for saying he wanted to be a rock star. That's actually what he grew up wanting to be. But the pain of carrying an amp to a smoky nightclub at 2 a.m. on a Tuesday over and over again, that wore on him, and he's like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Whereas the idea of getting into like Facebook comment wars with people, that was very appealing to him. Mm-hmm. So he did that hard work of learning how to write better.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's I often share with people that, you know, the word passion in its root form comes from the word that means to suffer. So we tell people to follow your passion. What we're saying is follow your suffering, which I think is more helpful.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so it's actually more helpful. It's more helpful to say, okay, that's great, follow your passion, but that means you're going to have to suffer on behalf of something. Maybe it doesn't mean you have to, but you might have to suffer on behalf of it in order to accomplish it. So do you care more about the outcome than you do about your temporary suffering? And I think it's a much more valuable piece of advice than just, hey, just follow whatever your heart says. Well, your heart's going to gravitate toward comfort, right? It's not going to gravitate toward the hard things necessary to accomplish. Okay, I want to ask you about the three morning prompts that you do every day. I think I found this so insightful and so valuable. Could you share a little about that and why you do that?
Sure. So first of all, get rid of the cell phone in the bedroom. You got to plug it into the basement. Like, get rid of that. And when you wake up, and people, by the way, always say, oh, it's my alarm clock. I'm like, go to Walmart, buy an alarm clock for $10.
Right.
Now when you wake up, I actually came up with a mind strengthening practice that I do every day. It's called 2-minute mornings. And what I do is I grab a journal or a piece of paper and I write down, I will let go of, I am grateful for, and I will focus on. Why? Well, I will let go of. Did you know that the fastest growing religion in the world is actually no religion, according to National Geographic, which means that there's a huge decline in the confession benefits that come with contemporary religion, like, you know, the Catholic confession chamber, and also Buddhism, Mormonism, Judaism, Islam, all have a form of confession baked in. These days, most of us don't have that if you are living in if you are living kind of without religion as the forefront in your mind. So what I say is, writing down I will let go of is proven by the study in Science magazine to actually let go of something. I will let go of whether or not my book's on the New York Times bestseller list. I will let go of the 5 pounds I gained over the Thanksgiving holidays. I will let go of comparing myself to pick an author that's better than me. I'm sure there's a million people better than you. So let go of it. I will let go of the snappy email I sent at 11 p.m. last night when I was just hungry and tired and I was so rude. Like, let go of that. Then I am grateful for, look, our brains naturally want to focus on the negatives while we rubberneck on the highway, so while we want to read the news. The news is disgusting and terrible and a horrible business that nobody should follow, but we all gravitate towards that because it's like, what's going to happen? Instead, we have to prime our brain for positivity each morning. Writing down a few gratitudes that are specific helps you do that. It can't just be like my husband, my kids, and my dog. It has to be like when my husband Rodriguez put the toilet seat down, when my 3-year-old ran to the front door when I got home from work, when my dog Trooper learned how to shake a paw. They have to be specific, okay? And the last prompt, remember, is I will focus on. These days, part of what's driving down our resilience and our mental strength is actually decision fatigue. We have too many choices. Again, the Netflix example applies here. Same with Spotify. Click it open and you are suddenly like turned into like a Medusa-like statue. Like, you don't know what to do. There's too many choices. Which way am I going to go to work? Which app should I use to follow to get there? Where should I eat lunch? Who should I eat with? What should I eat? Oh, I'm going to the buffet? Like, it's overwhelming. You go to the gym, there's too many options. You go on the treadmill, there's too many options.
Yeah.
Hill, manual. So you can't stop the options. What you can do is in the morning write down one thing you will focus on. Carve a will do from your should do, could do. And then at the end of the day, you will actually cross it off and feel like you got it done. Just to summarize, my 2-minute morning practice to strengthen your mind for the day is I will let go of, I am grateful for, and I will focus on.
Yeah, very, very helpful. We've been talking with Neil Pasricha. He is the author of You Are Awesome, How to Navigate Change, Wrestle with Failure, and Live an Intentional Life. Neil, if people want to come find you and learn more about the book, where can they go?
Every single thing about me is over at neil.blog, www.neil.blog. And at the end of the podcast, I always just shout out my email address. If something resonated with you and you want to drop me a line, feel free. It's just neil@globalhappiness.org, neil@globalhappiness.org.
Fantastic. Well, Neil, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you, Todd. Thanks for having me.
And as always, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts or at accidentalcreative.com/subscribe. Remember, friends, cover bands don't change the world. Don't be a cover band. You need to find your unique voice if you want to thrive. We'll see you next time.